The Backup Pushers podcast is a very fine data networking podcast, and that's why you listen. Today's show is a different take on VMware NSX. In a series of sponsored podcasts, we've talked to NSX customers all over the world about their real-life experiences of deploying and using NSX in their networks. We've focused mostly on the how, the what, and the where. We talk to people using VDI and using NSX there, same people using NFV, using NSX to build out virtual firewalls and virtual infrastructure. We've talked to other people who were using NSX for various purposes and deploying it themselves. They didn't have to go out. It was really quite straightforward. Today, we're looking at it from a different point of view. We're looking at the why of the NSX use case, starting with the discussions that you're going to have with the business. One of the strongest use cases for NSX has been around security. And we've talked often enough about this segmentation and how we get the flexibility to move the VMs around in the infrastructure, but being able to keep them safe and secure within each other and the policies and the strategies that we've got around that. But you don't get to deploy a new technology in your business just by wishing for fishes. You've actually got to come up with a strategy and go to the CIO and say, if we spend this much money, we get these types of benefits. And then there has to be an iterative discussion. So today, we're joined by Brendan Hahn from West Bend Mutual Insurance. It's going to be an interesting discussion, not so much on the technology, but on some of the business issues around it. So if you're thinking about going down to your CIO and starting off the discussion around how you revolutionize your data center, how you innovate that data center, if you like that word, then this is the show for you today. As always, I'm Greg Farrow, and with me is Ethan Banks, and I'd like to introduce Brendan to the show. Brendan, please tell people a little bit about yourself.
Sure, thanks for having me. So my name is Brendan Hahn. I'm a solution architect for West Bend Mutual Insurance. We're located in Wisconsin. At this point, we're a $1 billion insurance company. We deal with property and casualty insurance, so primarily personal lines, commercial lines, specialty insurance, workers' compensation. That's what we deal with on a daily basis.
So risk is your business, it's your product, and risk is also the thing that causes your business the most stress.
Absolutely. So, you know, a lot of the times when we look at, if we want to go into a new state or we want to put out a new product, we look at what's the risk to the business and how do we evaluate that and price it appropriately. And, you know, as we looked at technologies like NSX, we used a similar thought process to go there is organizationally, what is the risk that we're dealing with and how do we appropriately deal with the dollar value we can associate with that risk?
That's right. So you're specifically providing insurance for property and casualty, which is medical incidents?
Yeah. So, personal lines, we deal with, auto insurance. If you get into an accident, you have to get your car fixed. If you cause injury to someone else as a result of that accident, payment for that, home insurance, if there's damage to your house, hailstorm comes through, fire, those are the sorts of risks that we deal with in our personal lines business.
So when you talk about technology risk, what are the things that the company regards technology as being risky about? Let's assume that technology is important to the company because in an insurance game, there's only two things in there. One is the money and the other one is the technology that, manages the money. So where does the technology sit inside the organization in terms of security and its operational profile?
So technology for a business is very important. In the insurance industry, it's very highly regulated. So all of your products and your pricing of those products is filed with regulators. So if anyone wants to enter the insurance industry and they can have enough capital to do that, they can see exactly what products we're making and duplicate them. And they can see exactly our pricing and duplicate it or undercut us. So there's really only two places that you can compete in the insurance industry. And one, that's pricing, which I already mentioned. And the primary way that you do that is by having better technology so you can evaluate risk better or it's a lower cost of ownership. And then the other way is on customer service. When you pick up that phone, you have an auto accident, how well are they taking care of you and making sure that, you're made whole at the end of the day. So those are the two ways that you can compete. So, West Bend, we really try to compete on both. We're doing a lot of on the technology side to drive our costs down, but then also on the customer service side, making sure that you have a good experience, whenever you have to deal with us.
So where's the risk in that model then? So West Bend operates at a technology infrastructure. There's always a risk when you're operating a business at some level or another. Operating a technology infrastructure is full of risk. What are the key risks that you're looking to address with technology?
Yeah, so and I can even make this just a little bit broader than West Bend in specific. So, you know, there's a methodology out there called enterprise risk management, which basically goes across all the assets of the organization and determines how you need to protect them. So when I say assets, you know, it goes everything from physical assets, so the land, the building, you know, any equipment you have, you know, your customers, any affiliates you have, your relationships with suppliers, any, you know, obviously cash that you have. But also then you start talking about what assets do you have from an IT perspective? What data do you have on site? Mm-hmm. And most organizations, the data that is a asset that you need to protect falls into two categories, either intellectual property or personally identifiable information. So when you're talking about IP, you know, in insurance, because we file our what would be our IP, you know, our products with regulators, we really don't have a lot of IP we need to protect. A manufacturing company, on the other hand, probably has a lot of IP. You know, you have, you know, if you're talking about a medical device company, they have their blueprints, how to make their, you know, whether it's their CT scanners, their X-ray machines, all those very expensive devices where there's a ton of R&D that goes into those, they want to protect that IP and make sure that someone can't come into the market and undercut them.
So the key risk that you've outlined there, that I think if I got that right, was the personally identifiable data. You don't want people getting a hold of people's personal information and the insurance policy they've bought, not only because people could use that to attack them personally, but also because your competitors could take that data to attack your business.
Correct. So, and there's also really a third point that's really important to remember, especially in insurance, is that insurance is a promise. What we're selling with insurance is a promise that you're going to give us money every month in your premium or yearly or however you pay, but you're going to give us money. And then if something bad happens to you, we're going to make you whole up to what we've agreed to. And, you know, we're selling a promise. So when we're holding that personally identifiable information and that gets breached, that's a huge reputational impact. You know, you look at a company like Home Depot or Target, where, yeah, they were breached, but, you know, that's not their bread and butter. They're not selling a promise. They're selling something. And so, you know, at the end of the day, someone's like, oh, they breached my information. You know, they'll still go back there. You know, I was impacted by the Target breach. I still shop at Target. You know, when you're dealing with a company that is, in essence, selling a promise to you, you know, not having your data treated appropriately is a much bigger issue because you've just impacted the trust that your product relies on.
And there's more personal information in there too. I mean, if I'm dealing with my insurance carrier, they know a lot of things about me. And so it's going to be more than just my credit card number that's going away. It's all sorts of personal bits about me that I really don't want out there. So yes, it's a breach of trust and it's a more egregious trust breach.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you look at the type of information that we need just to operate as a business, you know, if you want insurance for your car, we're going to need your driver's license. You know, if we want to, you know, as part of our pricing formula, you know, we have to publish those. You know, if we want to look up your credit score, we're going to need a way to look that up. And the most common way is, you know, Social Security number. So, you know, there's a lot of data that either resides or is transitively in our systems that we need to protect.
I want to generalize on that a little bit. What you've just outlined there is an understanding of a business, of the key values of your business, so that when you go to talk to the executives and the management about your needs to change IT, and in a minute we'll talk about the business drivers for NSX, you had a good understanding of the business before you started talking to the upper layers of management. Is that a fair assumption?
Yeah, absolutely. To really come at and understand where the business wants to go and how, as an IT, you know, everyone talks about being a partner to the business. Mm-hmm. And you can't be a partner to the business if you don't know what the business is, how the business talks, how the business runs. The day of being a technologist and just sitting down and banging out your technology and not knowing how your business makes money is coming to an end. You know, to be really successful, you need to understand how your business runs and the industry.
But it's not difficult to understand how a business runs either. Like, you didn't have to go off to business college for a decade to work out how this works, did you? You just had to ask somebody.
No, exactly. And the thing is, when you start asking around in your company, hey, you know, how do we make money? People are very willing to talk to you about that. And, you know, they're willing to say, hey, you know, and then they start opening up with, you know, these are our pain points. know, can you help us? Mm. And that really starts the dialogue.
It's one of the subtexts of the Phoenix Project, that book that's come up on the show here recently, probably because I just read it, but that's exactly what happens in that book, where the IT folks begin to interview different parts of the business to understand how the business makes money and how technology within the company affects their ability to make money and gives them a real strong knowledge base to go ahead and develop IT processes that map back to the business in a way that makes sense.
And the other thing here is too, is IT can talk to all parts of the business. It's one of the few functional areas in a business model which touches everybody: executives, operators, telephone, call center, you know, payment processing, accounts receivable, all of it. You can actually get to talk to anybody. Okay, so we've done enough of the background about what the business is and how that works. Tell me, you started to look at VMware's NSX as a key part of your network security strategy. So what were the business drivers that led you into that?
So really the business drivers for us is we were doing that enterprise risk management assessment of, you know, what are the assets that we have to protect. And so we did a system by system analysis, and this is IT system by IT system, of what data we had. So first off, we needed to understand what data do we have in our organization that could be impactful if we lost. And we wanted to see what the impacts and explore the impacts of losing those. So you know, the first impact really was, what if we fail to meet regulatory compliance requirements? You know, that's obviously will have a financial impact for us and a reputational impact. So we started exploring that. We wanted to look at, you know, what would happen if we had impaired data availability. So, you know, in the insurance industry, when I get into an accident, I assume that when I call the claims number on the back of my insurance card, someone's going to answer. Someone's going to be able to look up then and see, yep, I'm a policyholder, and this is my coverage and what to do going forward. If I call in and the system's down and they can't look that up, that promise that was sold to me is worthless. So that was something that we were really concerned about. The third thing was data integrity. Was making sure that, you know, when I called in and I did reach the operator on the phone and was able to confirm that I had a policy, that the information in that policy was correct. You know, whether someone maliciously changed that or you accidentally did, you know, if my coverage was at $500,000 and that's what I'm paying for, but the data integrity is wrong and I only am showing $100,000 of coverage, that's a big issue. And then finally, the biggest risk that kept us up at night was the breach of confidential data. You know, what happens if our data that we need to protect goes out? And so really looking at those four areas were the business drivers of we need to protect these assets. How best can we do that? And the conversation at that point wasn't around NSX. We still haven't even got to what technology we want to use to do that. We're at this point just talking about what assets we need to protect and how we want to protect them. And that was really where we started talking next about, you know, there's really four things that you can do to manage risk. So once we've identified the risk, so we kind of did a system by system analysis and figured out if we were to lose the data in that system, if it were to be breached, what is that financial impact to our organization? And how do we deal with that?
And you've got a number. You came up with a number for that.
Yeah. So there's a lot of information that's available publicly. There was a study done. I forget who did it, but it was in 2015 where they looked at all the data breaches that occurred in 2015. And in the United States, the average data breach ended up costing the company breach $217 a record. And so that included the breach notification, notifying everyone that was impacted, offering credit monitoring service, reputational damage, impact for systems not being available as they were being remediated, and any regulatory fines. And so, you know, when you hear $217 a record, then you're like, oh, that's not too bad. You know, when you think about, but then you start scaling that up. So let's take an example here. Let's say that, you know, we've got our personal line system. Let's say we have 50,000 policies in there, and every policy has two drivers. So we've got 100,000 driver's licenses in our system. Mm. Times $200 a record, that's a $20 million impact. That gets very expensive very fast.
Yeah. So it's really, I think the thing to take away perhaps from that is that, A, you sat down and worked out how much it would cost in the event of a breach. how much it would cost for notification and also for the fix. So you laid out the cost for the credit monitoring service as well.
Yeah, and one thing to note is those costs really don't include the fix to the IT systems, because you still have your underlying vulnerability that caused you to get breached that you have to remediate. Mm-hmm. This is just, you know, basically stopping the bleeding going forward. It's not going back and fixing what caused the issue. So, you know, when you consider, you know, if you have to bring a forensics team on site because you don't have one internally in your company to figure out how you were breached, you know, those costs add up really fast, especially if, you know, your business, you know, needs to be up and running to make money.
And the second part about that is you also attach some sort of value to reputational damage. So when you went to the execs, you said there's reputational damage. What did you do there? Did you attach a cost to do with marketing to recover the reputation, or just some sort of goodwill brought onto the books around reputation?
Yeah, and that really depends on the industry that you're in and how much reputation depends on that. In the study that I mentioned earlier, you know, healthcare had one of the highest dollar values of cost for the breach, and that was due to the reputational damage. You know, who wants to go to a, you know, healthcare provider where you know your health data got leaked? But then what I found really interesting is the lowest sector in terms of the cost per record for breaches was the public sector. And it was specifically called out because there is no reputation for them to be lost. Everyone hates them anyway.
That might be cultural. There are other parts of the world who would regard that as a bug. But anyway, we'll take that. So now we've got to the situation where you've attached a value to it by looking for studies and related industry. You've actually given some discipline to the structure there. I can see that. Now that you've convinced the business to go ahead, how did you come up with a plan to manage the risks that you've got? So you've identified areas. The first thing you do when you start talking about managing risks is you've got to identify the risks that you want to manage. How did you go about that?
Absolutely. You know, when you look at managing risk, there's really only four things you can do. The first thing you can do is you can accept the risk, and you can basically say, you know what, this is just a cost of doing business. You know, we're not going to spend more money to try to do something to the risk. We're just going to accept it and roll with it. And this is actually what a lot of businesses have been being forced into when they try to say, you know, micro segmentation is the solution, and they try to do it, you know, pre-SDN, you know, when they, you know, before ACI, before NSX, you know, you look at physical firewalls everywhere between all VLANs, you know, it gets very prohibitively expensive, especially on an OPEX side. And so a lot of companies just say, you know what, we're going to accept that risk.
Too costly and too impractical to do micro-segmentation in the old way.
In the old way, exactly.
And so therefore, the business just goes, fine, we'll eat it because it's too expensive to actually mitigate the risk. It actually makes more financial sense for us to just suck up the loss should we be breached.
Exactly. And that's what a lot of companies and you know, the status quo is, hey, you know, we've looked at these technologies in the past. It's just not feasible for us. And, you know, fortunately, the tables have turned on that. And, you know, there's a lot of technologies out there that make it feasible now. And we'll get to that in a minute. But, you know, that's what a lot of companies are dealing with. And then the second thing you can do is also something that a lot of companies are dealing with. And this is avoiding the risk. And so this is more focused on, you know, expansion plans. Say that, you know, as a company, you want to get into a new market. You want to expand into a new territory. You want to start selling in a new country. Or you want to start up a new product line. There's additional data that needs to be stored with that, which you have to protect. And if you're not comfortable with that additional risk, oftentimes you'll just say, hey, you know, we'd love to go there from a business perspective, but from an IT perspective, we can't support that. And this is another thing where there's just a lot of butting of heads between the business and IT and why there's been a lot of friction in the past. Because IT is saying, hey, I understand where you want to go as a business, but we can't support you. And then the business says, well, if you can't support us, then what are you doing for us?
So give us an example of that. Is there something you've run into where that's been an issue, where technology just couldn't keep up with what the business wanted to do?
Look, for us, it's adding, you know, new territories that we want to go into, whether that's new states or new products. You know, additional regulatory requirements for going into new states. You know, additional products is additional data that we have to store responsibly. And it's just a decision of, hey, you know, from a security standpoint, we're not comfortable with that quite yet. It becomes a very difficult conversation. And the line between acceptance and avoidance is often very blurry, which is why I covered them kind of as points one and point two. Because oftentimes IT will say, we need to avoid this risk because we don't have the appropriate controls in place. So IT comes in and says, hey, we need to avoid this. And then the business comes in and says, you know what? It's more important for us to go in, just deal with it. And now you have to accept that risk.
So, okay, so that last sentence, that's my experience right there. It's you go back to the business and go, you don't want to do this. We really can't accommodate this. And here are the reasons why, whether it's expense or just, you know, staffing or impracticality or regulatory concerns, whatever that might be. And the business says, that's wonderful that you're challenged in this way. We're going to go ahead and do it anyway. And then off they go, you know, and take you dragging behind them. So it seems like it's going to happen. Whether you want it to or not.
Exactly. And that line is very blurred, and oftentimes it takes a very mature enterprise risk management practice to get everyone, including the business, to agree on avoidance. And oftentimes, if you can provide a roadmap saying, hey, we can't do this today, but we're bringing a new technology in like NSX or ACI for micro-segmentation, and we can do it for you next year, or, you know, in 18 months, then the business can go more to the, hey, you know what, we're going to avoid this for the next 18 months, and then we'll go ahead and move to the next point that I want to talk about, which is, you know, reducing the risk or mitigating the risk.
So, yeah, let's jump into that risk mitigation point, because I think what we're getting to here is the big idea that technology has evolved, just like you brought up, to a point where you can realistically, without having to increase staff or spend bazillions of dollars, do things that we architecturally as network engineers could not have done in the very recent past.
Yeah, absolutely. So risk mitigation or reduction, that's really the kind of holy grail of where you want to get. It's where you're allowing the business to go and do whatever they want. You're partnering with them, but you have controls in place that mitigate either the likelihood of a breach occurring or the impact of that breach occurring, thereby reducing the risk from the dollar value associated with the risk that you've identified. And so there's a lot of different technologies that play in this area. You know, micro-segmentation is a huge one and is probably the leader, but there are some other interesting ones like data tokenization. It all comes down to being able to secure the data that you have on-premise or eliminate it like you often do with data tokenization.
I think the thing about micro-segmentation, and this is where VMware NSX is the thing, is it allows you to apply firewall policy, or effectively it allows you to put a firewall on every VM. In a practical way, you can actually administer the security policy through that firewall from the NSX controller platform. And that is absolutely key. Because you've got an individual firewall for every single VM, you've suddenly changed your posture. You've got much better security. You've removed the risk of data theft because you've got policy everywhere, but you've also removed the risk of somebody getting in and getting too much data. Do you want to talk a little bit around how micro-segmentation addresses those risks?
Yeah, absolutely. And one important point that I want to bring up is, you know, the end state, obviously, is firewalls everywhere, but you don't have to jump right to that point. And what's nice about risk reduction is you can determine as a business that there's a certain amount of risk that you're willing to accept in order to do business. And that might mean that, hey, you know, we're just going to separate our production environment from our lower environments, whether that's, you know, pre-prod, dev, stage, whatever. We're going to separate those environments. Or perhaps you go further and you say, you know, within those environments, which are network segmented from each other, we're going to segment the different applications from each other. Or you can even take it a step further and say, you know, we're going to segment the components of an application to make sure they're only talking with each other within an application as needed. And so it's that granularity where to move between those different stages doesn't require new infrastructure. It's all policy that you're changing. And so it's one of those things where it allows you to skip some technology stages. So yeah. So the example that I like to give is if you go over and look like in Africa, for instance, there's no landlines anywhere, but everyone has a cell phone. And so the reason why is as landlines were the predominant technology, it was very expensive to roll that out with the copper, and so it didn't go very far. And then once cell phones came out, it removed that barrier of having to run copper to everyone's house.
Have you seen the stories about where they dig it up? Yeah.
It's terrible.
Yeah, that's right.
People will go on vacation for a while and you know, they'll come back and all the copper's out of their house.
I guess there was a couple of things there. One is when you've got the firewall attached to every VM, let's take it past the business value. So the security team would have had to be engaged somewhere in here. So how did they take to their adapting their policies and their processes and address and agreeing that this risk model that you've prepared actually is what it says?
So we're actually very fortunate in that our information security team is actually not in IT. Our information security team is located under our risk organization. So, you know, for us, that makes a huge benefit and makes a lot of sense. But, you know, they were really a lot of the drivers of this, of understanding the risk value associated with the systems and then figuring out how do we go about mitigating that and at what level. And so they were very upfront with us and saying, hey, let's take time to create the appropriate policies and make sure that we're tuning the level of risk in our organization to the right amount. And when they saw the granularity and the flexibility that we could get with NSX, they were very excited about that.
So it sounds like you've got humans in your security team instead of the normal freak show.
Yeah, I would say that is very much the case.
So you don't have anybody who does judo or picks locks, has long hair, you know, black T-shirts with heavy metal on them and things like that?
Well, you know, three out of the four, and I'll let you choose which three out of the four you just said. We've got three out of the four, but, you know, we'll go with that.
Let me ask you another issue, right? You've now deployed NSX. You've given them the business case. You've got it down. Do you find that things are better and how are they better? Like, if they're better, why is it better? What's missing? What's working? What's great? What's not?
So full disclosure, we are not in production yet with NSX. We are still going through the deployment right now. Mm-hmm. But what we're finding is as we are creating these policies and everything is policy driven, that it really gives us flexibility as we look forward to our future application architectures.
Well, Brandon, elaborate on policy-driven, because you accentuated that, but then I think a lot of engineers think, I know what a firewall policy is. It's IP addresses and port numbers and built in a rule set. That's a policy. But I don't think that's what you mean here.
No, exactly. And so, you know, when we talk policy in this instance, we're talking about security policy. And so we're saying, you know, never should production data exist unmasked or untokenized in a lower environment, might be a policy, for instance. Or development servers are not allowed to talk to QA servers. And so those are the policies that we're going after. And really being able to say that, you know, when you create that verbal policy and write it on paper, it's like, great, how are you going to enforce that? But then you go to NSX and you have like Service Composer, where you can have regex for the naming scheme of your servers, and any server that matches that development server naming scheme gets added to a logical group for development servers. And then you've got another regex for another logical group, which is for your QA servers. And then you just create a policy in NSX saying QA servers and dev servers, those two logical groups, never the two shall talk. And so that's really what I mean by policy driven. And so, yes, there certainly is that what is the actual network policy, but you're not writing it as just a simple ACL. You're using dynamic group membership to really understand, even though the environment's in flux, and we add a new server, we remove a new server, we don't have to go back and change the policy. The policy is always consistent.
So when you create the VM, and through the VM, you know what operating system it is. There's a naming convention. The VM lives in some group inside of the ESX controller inside of vCenter. So the policies are automatically attached to it through NSX. And you just don't have to do anything. This is the thing that makes me excited about NSX, just to deviate a little bit, is this. Instead of having to go to a firewall and troll through thousands of firewall rules for each unique IP address, it's actually quite automated in the sense that much of this policy is just automatically attached and inherited as well.
Absolutely. And that's really what got us excited from the, the OpEx standpoint, is understanding that the maintenance and keeping this going and avoiding, you know, ACL hell is a lot easier because you're not writing individual ACLs. You're letting NSX figure out what those need to be, and you're operating at the policy level, which is, you know, how humans like to talk.
Okay, so as we're getting towards the end of the show, I wanted to just summarize something here. One of the key things that I saw here, Brandon, was that you did a couple of things that a lot of IT people perhaps aren't normally able to do. One was you were able to sit down and identify that there was a risk, and then you were able to go and talk to people inside of the business and attach a dollar value to solving those risks, or if the risk event actually happened. That is, if somebody breached you, how much would it physically cost? And you ended up with that $217 number of it per person. And then, so when the CIO has to go and beg for budget, you know, or allocate budget to the project that you're trying to propose with the solution in VMware NSX, you actually had hard numbers. Now, that must have been a really powerful debate for you, Brandon.
Absolutely. It really changes the conversation from, hey, if we get breached, something bad would happen, and that doesn't give me warm fuzzies, and I have problems sleeping at night, to saying, hey, if something bad happens and I get breached, the company's out $20 million. Do you want to spend $1 million on network segmentation or whatever it ends up costing? Or do you want to be the one who approved, you know, saying that, hey, we're okay with being out $20 million?
Now you're not just sitting there saying wafty things like, oh, if we get breached, it's going to be very bad. And we all know how bad that is, right?
Correct. You have numbers and you can quantify things. And that really is the conversation point, because the business runs on numbers. And once you have that hard number and not a feeling, that's where the conversation starts.
Now, the other thing about what you've done here that struck me was you then went and spoke to different people in the business to get an understanding of the business just by going and talking to the different people, and then you were able to make this work. Literally, you were able to go and say, this is what this would happen, this is how the numbers work, this is the justification. And I do often feel, and I know I was guilty of this when, you know, 20 years ago when I first set out in IT, I was guilty of not living outside of my bubble. I would just say IT is everything, and my blinkers were on and I was focused on what I was doing. And it wasn't till later on when my career progressed and I'd been in different parts of IT like sales and management that I started to get outside of the bubble and realize that everything feeds into IT. You've got to go out there and talk to people and understand what's going on around you. And I think that was a key part of your success here in laying out this business case.
Absolutely. It's very critical that you understand what the business is and where it's trying to go, so you can make sure that the services you're delivering with the business allow them to get where they want to go. And that was huge for us with the micro-segmentation and NSX, allowing our business to say, hey, you know, if you want to bring in a new system, bring in a new product line, go to a new state, we have the capability to handle that data that we need to have appropriately. So when do you want to go?
All right. Well, I think that's pretty much about it today. Ethan, have you got any closing thoughts about what we've talked about today? This is not the normal sort of format that we follow. I wonder if it's inspired you.
It's not the normal show format that we do, but what is key here, it's been a recurring theme on Packet Pusher for the last year, maybe two now, where we've been talking about have a conversation with the business, have a discussion with the stakeholders in IT as far as what they need and how, then use that information to figure out how to use IT to the business's benefit. And so here's a key point that NSX in this case solved a very specific business problem in the world of risk mitigation for West Bend Mutual Insurance. So that, to me, resonates very strongly. And if we haven't beat the point over the head yet, if it's not quite dead, you can't be in IT in your cave ignoring what the business does and just do your thing sitting at a command line and moving things around in the GUI and expecting to provide business value. IT's got to get beyond that.
You don't need to be a business expert either. You just need to have a sort of a general awareness. And I think, as I've already said, I think twice already, just go and talk to people. They'll help you.
Yes. And yes. And if you don't know who to talk to first, or you're shy, or you're introverted, or you're that person, talk to your boss or their boss and say, I want to learn more about the business so I can understand how we fit into things. Can you introduce me, broker a meeting? Who do I talk to? And those conversations will happen. And ultimately, they're easy conversations to have.
For me, they always come up in the process of delivering a project. You know, you have to deliver something, you can just ask and people will always help you. People want to help. They're not there to make your life miserable. Well, I don't know, maybe except for some of the companies I've worked for. Well, on that note, thanks for listening to Packet Pushers today. Thanks, Brandon, for joining us. Really appreciate your time. Are you social? Can people go and find you on the internet?
Yes, absolutely. The two best places to find me would either be Twitter or LinkedIn. So twitter.com/Brandon Hahn or LinkedIn is linkedin.com/in/Brandon Hahn. So pretty easy.
All right. Thanks very much for joining us today. Thanks so much for your time. And thanks to VMware NSX for sponsoring this quite unique show. And thanks to them for being great sports. You can find this and many more fine free technical podcasts along with our community blog at packetpushers.net. Follow us on the Twitter is at packetpushers. Find us on LinkedIn. We're on Facebook. And please, please rate us on iTunes. If you've loved what you've heard, rating us on iTunes is the best way for us to get more people to hear this. And as always, remember that too much networking would never be enough.